From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in roughly 35 communities from Ithaca to Corning, Canandaigua to Rochester. We're talking about farmers markets, often a weekly event throughout the growing season, and they've grown in recent years with more vendors, more activities, new markets opening in the past 12 months. Well, recently on this show, we've talked about farming issues and food issues from a variety of angles, CSAs, GMOs, and more. Today, we're looking at the impact of farmers markets on the people who grow our food and make up our communities. We've got a diverse panel this hour. Joining us in our packed studio are Sandy Munson, the co-owner of Fisher Hill Farms in Bristol. Sandy, nice to see you.
Thanks, Evan.
Dennis LaPelle is here. Dennis is from Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington. Dennis, thanks for making the drive in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Also here is David Romaine, the co-owner of Cipolla Romaine, which operates, among other things, one of my favorite food trucks, which is, which one did I get at Pittsburgh?
Let Us Be Frank.
Let Us Be Frank. It's fabulous. Some of the best sliders I've ever had, by the way.
Thank you.
You're responsible for. Jackie Farrell's here. Jackie is the manager of the Westside Farmers Market. Jackie, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Sue Gardner-Smith is here, the manager of the Brighton and South Wedge Farmers Market. Sue, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So you manage a couple of them, and we see farmers markets. Pittsford's new. Later this hour, we're going to hear from the Pittsford Village manager of that market coming up here. But we see more markets now than I remember when I moved to the area more than a decade ago. Tell me about what you've seen when it comes to growth of farmers markets.
Well, the growth of the farmers markets really coincides with the growth of the food movement throughout the country. And our area is no exception to that. We've seen a real large growth over the last few years. I think the statistic that I have lodged in my mind is that over the last 10 or 20 years, nationally, the numbers went from, I think, 1,700 to over 8,000 markets. And right here in our area, actually, I'm not sure, but I think it's probably close to 15 or 20 markets. Right here in the Rochester area, we have a number of little city markets, urban markets, and several suburban markets as well. The Brighton Farmers Market was started in 2008, the South Wedge Farmers Market in 2007. That was one of the first kind of unique markets in the area. It focused on sustainable growers and became a very popular local market right off the bat. We started Brighton the following year.
And now we're seeing Pittsford Village. We're seeing all across the Finger Lakes. I was looking at a list of Finger Lakes farmers markets. They're just about everywhere. It's generally once a week throughout the growing season. Give me a sense for some of the timing, Sue.
It varies. Most of the markets are once a week throughout the growing season. However, there's been a real move toward extending the growing season because so many of our customers have signed on to the local food movement and are really seeking local foods. We now are able to offer a year-round farmers market at Brighton. We have a market throughout the entire year. Several of our farmers have figured out ways through building high tunnels and greenhouses to extend the growing season. A lot of them, including Fisher Hill Farm, Sandy's here, have installed very extensive cold storage systems that allow them to store crops throughout the year. So although in general it's once a week throughout the growing season, it's now possible to go to farmers markets throughout the whole year.
And we've got some folks in here who not only manage, but also are vendors at Sandy. How many? Sandy Munson from Fisher Hill Farms. Boy, it's hard to say for some reason. Fisher Hill Farms. Sandy, how many different farmers markets do you vend at?
Actually, this year we've gone down to only 5 markets
only
a week.
Only 5.
We have been up as high as maybe 8 or 9 a week. We had our second daughter this past Thanksgiving, so that made us kind of reprioritize our time, and well, we kind of had to in some ways, but down to just 5 this year. We do Canandaigua, South Wedge, the public market twice a week, Brighton, and then another little one at the Canandaigua Hospital on Monday afternoon.
So that's either 5 afternoons or nights a week?
Yes. Generally, the markets are 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
That's kind of the going time frame to let people come when they can.
And Dennis from Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington, what about you? How many farmers markets are you attending and vending at?
Currently, I'm vending at 3 farmers markets. I also do the Canandaigua and the Brighton markets with Fisher Hill Farms, but I also do the new Pittsford Village market.
And how's it going?
It's going. It's off to a kind of a slow start for us, but mm-hmm. We're optimistic that things will pick up for us.
Sometimes it's just a case of awareness, I would think. You know, for example, I'm out with my son all the time, and we're out in the canal, et cetera. And when you're a parent with a toddler, I said the other day, you know, I did not know that, for example, David Gray, one of my favorite artists, put out a new album. And I said, I have a toddler. I can miss anything. I have to be – you have to alert me when things in my life are changing here. You can't rely on a parent of a toddler to know things. And then all of a sudden we're in Pittsford and we see the farmer's market. And my friend said, yeah, it just seemed to pop up. So I guess it's a matter of awareness in many ways.
I would have to agree with that. I just think it's been a thing that where people are kind of stumbling upon it. And there's been – you know, they've offered a few things. Last week we had the dog parade, and that brought a lot of people to the market for the first time. So we're hoping that events like that will you know, encourage people to come find the market, see the market, and then stay and come back on a weekly basis. It's about not just that market, but every market, you know, is really about eating fresh local food, you know, when it's available. So, you know, a weekly visit to the market, I think, is fundamental in that quest for good food.
Dennis, when we talk about food trends, will always be food trends. There will be certain foods and preparation techniques that are hot, whether it's in restaurants or home, et cetera. But I don't think locavore is a trend. I feel like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 100 years from now, the notion of eating local food, it's not going to be, oh, yeah, people used to eat local food. I feel like that is only growing and strengthening, not as a trend, but as a lifestyle and more of a value choice. What do you think?
I would have to agree with that. You could even see that, you know, even in the stores, they are trying to, you know, kind of ride on our market coattails by offering in a market sort of setting local food. So you know that we're onto something good when
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, you could go into certain stores and see carts that look like market carts stocked with vegetables that have been grown in the Finger Lakes. So to me, that's, you know, kind of trying to, you know, take a look at what we're doing and emulate, you know, sort of a market setting on a much more commercial basis.
Now, you're not throwing darts at that practice, are you?
Absolutely. Well, no. I'm not throwing darts at it because, you know.
Especially if they support the local farmers,
well,
if they really are. Yeah.
That's part of it too. But then also, you know, you get more awareness that way. You say people will see this one little cart and think, well, what might else be out there? And, you know, when you see people in those places and you mention to them, well, you know, there's this market or that market, and some people come, some people don't. But it's everything to get more people into buying food from, you know, the local suppliers like us. You know, it's what it's all about for us.
David Romaine, the co-owner of Cipolla Romaine. First of all, what is Cipolla Romaine, David?
Cipolla Romaine's a collaboration between myself and Joseph Cipolla. It's two chefs named after produce. We figured we gotta work together and make an overheading name.
Your name can't really be Romaine, or
it is actually my middle name.
That's really your middle name.
It's my grandfather's first name. His middle name was Homer, so I'm glad I got the Romaine.
So Cipolla Romaine is two chefs who are doing – what does the business cover?
The business is a full-service event planning and catering company. We specialize in mobile venues and building customized menus for events. We have several mobile outlets that do coverage from basically Buffalo to the Finger Lakes. And it's from weddings to backyard barbecues to festivals to farmers markets. Let Us Be Frank was the big signature that I had started with.
Which, by the way, again, Let Us Be Frank is a food truck.
It's actually a cart.
Oh, it's a food. It's a cart.
It's a food cart.
Cart.
Yes, we get misclassified with that, but you know, I always take it with stride. We get nominated as best food truck every year, and I'm like, that's great. I'll take it.
Best food cart every year. And I should let our listeners know again. When my son and I were out at the market, I picked up some beet sliders from Let Us Be Frank, and it was some of the best food I've had in a long time. It was just absolutely outstanding.
Thank you. Glad you liked it.
Where do you, when you have to make decisions on where you're sourcing, how do you make those decisions?
We try to source as much as local as possible, and it's been an evolving process. Our third year with the cart itself. My biggest goals with starting that was that I wanted to change the perspective of, you know, fast food not having to be unhealthy. You know, it's not the typical street meat, and that was the biggest challenge we first started working with Jackie, and people are like, this is just another hot dog cart. And it's like, no, we're showing farm fresh. We're showing local, sustainable stuff. We even coined our own term, farm to foil, because I said I don't have tables.
farm to foil, I like
it. We come with our own recycling bins, so there's either compost or everything's recycled. So trying to start a good movement with that, and it's done very well so far.
Do I remember correctly? I think our friends picked up, it was like a garbage plate version of a farm plate.
We call it the farmer's plate.
The farmer's plate.
Yes.
If you can do a healthy version of the garbage plate, you have truly changed the world.
Actually,
what is on the farmer's plate?
It's a vegan and actual gluten-free, if needed, garbage plate. We start with a rosemary sweet potato, and then we do a vegan coleslaw. And this is mainly the base of it. And then you can have, we change with the season, our pickled vegetables. So we might have a dill bean, we'll have a pickled red onion, pickled jalapenos, garlic dill pickles. And then you choose your toppings. So whether we have a handmade carrot slider, it's a vegan carrot slider, a vegan beet slider, or we do local beef that's from Seven Bridges Farm, or we do an Irish bacon and egg, which is also from Seven Bridges. And everything is cooked to order. I have that same problem. People kind of look and peer over, and they're like, well, what are you cooking? I'm like, what do you want?
Yeah.
We like to make everything fresh and show people everything that you can get at the market. And we do our best to try to sample from all the local vendors as well.
And so which markets, again, are you currently at?
Currently this year, we started with Pittsford, and we've been with Brighton. This our third year. It's been a great success having the brunch there. The breakfast from 9 to 1 is amazing. So we have a very big turnout. In this third year, the event planning, the catering, is just overwhelmed. So we try to focus with that market.
It's a good problem to have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we're trying to just push forward with that. And you'll see us at the festivals and a lot of the other events. But, the phones are just blowing up with people wanting to see more of the food there. So.
And when you are at a farmer's market, are you there because you want public visibility? Are you there to make as much money as you can in a night, or is it also about community visibility and just getting your name out there?
I like making people happy with food. That's probably the biggest and basis of everything. We have it written on our door before we leave. You know, there's no such thing as perfect food, but our goal is to make people happy with food. And, you know, starting that vibe and starting in the farmers markets to showcase that here's what you can do with stuff from Dennis's farm and from Sandy's and different places. Into that same vibe that you talked about, you know, the locavore thing. I'd love for the day that locavore is as boring as saying, I put salt on my food. You know, everybody should be eating that way. So we're trying to introduce that. And it's the same when we started the restaurant. I was, where are your trash cans? Well, we have compost and recycling. You know, if we can start that trend and get things going, it's something beautiful to see and watch it grow.
It's our first Farmers Market Roundtable here on Connections. And if you have your favorites or questions or comments about what you like to attend out there, we'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Whether you're listening on WXXI Radio, maybe our mobile app or online, or WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, all throughout the Finger Lakes. We're thrilled you're joining us on this Thursday afternoon. Now, as David's been telling you more of what they do at these markets, I should have also asked Sandy and Dennis, every farm and every person who ends up vending at a market has a different approach. So Dennis, when you are, say you're at Pittsford Village Farmers Market, let's get the terminology correct here. Are you there selling produce or other things, or are you also serving food to be eaten at the time? How do you approach it?
Well, we not only raise certified organic vegetables, but we also raise certified organic chicken and eggs. So we're there not with just vegetables, but with our chicken that we cut fresh into parts, as well as our line of vegetables. In our vegetables, we try to distinguish ourselves by growing varieties that are slightly different than traditional varieties that you would get when you were to, say, go to a retail store. So we offer things that are familiar to people, but in varieties that are a little bit different. So our goal is to try to broaden the variety selection of the customer and give them more things to choose from when it comes time to plan a meal and to make a meal.
Sandy, your approach?
Yeah, I think it's similar to Dennis's. We don't strive necessarily to do unique varieties. We really strive to do almost everything. When people say, well, what do you grow? Well, kind of what don't we grow that can be grown locally? And I think that it's really, to me, it's fun to show people that, yes, you can grow cantaloupes here. Yes, you can grow watermelons here. You know, my daughter keeps asking, can we buy the watermelon in the store? No, we'll have watermelon pretty soon. Cool, can we buy the corn? No, we'll have corn, you know, our own corn pretty soon. So I'm not a true, like, stickler on that, but there's certain things that I know are coming out of our garden, or our fields really that we'll be eating at home. And I think it's kind of fun to show people that it's sometimes I really try not to get frustrated with people who ask. They really honestly want to know where are the bananas and where are the oranges. and you have to say this is a local farmer's market.
Yeah.
Everything here that you see was grown here, was made by the person standing behind that table. They stirred the jam, they made that soap, they raised those bees, and they took the honey out of the... Go ask them those questions about that. This is almost as close as you're going to get without doing it yourself. And I think, to me, that is the heart of what we're all doing.
That conversation reminds me of when my wife and I were in Montalcino, Italy in 2008, we bumped into, of all things, a chef from Toronto at a small Italian town. And he was saying that he loved the culture there, that he loves cooking with fennel, but you only get it for like 2 weeks. And you love – that's it. And hope you like those dishes because they'll be gone soon. I feel the same way about strawberries now. They're essentially done, and it's a sad, sad day when you start seeing – no offense, Driscoll's, but I don't – that's a sad day for me when that starts to dominate the market again. Let's go to the phones. This is Pam in Pittsford. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, I go to the other farmers market in Pittsford, and I've been going there for years. There's a Pittsford farm market that's in Colony Plaza off Monroe Avenue, and they've got great stuff. So,
yeah, do you go for the community atmosphere? Or do you go there to spend time there, or do you go there to shop?
I go to the shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am not by nature a shopper, so I go there to get very fresh fruit and vegetables. And there's also some folks there that sell flowers. I don't get those. And there's some people that are selling honey and a few things, some big goods and things like that. So sometimes I meander over there.
Well, and thanks for the call, Pam. I think that shows you that there are people who are going to go out there to shop. But I think the conversation broadens when you think about the impact of farmers markets as community builders. And let me ask the two women in the room who manage some of these, what the goals are. And let me start with I'll start with Jackie Farrell, who manages the West Side Farmers Market. First of all, where's the West Side Farmers Market?
The West Side Farmers Market is on Genesee Street in the west side of the city, in the St. Monica Church parking lot.
And when?
On Tuesday nights, 4 o'clock, 4 to 7:30.
Tuesday nights, 4 to 7:30. So, we just heard from Pam, and she is somebody who goes out. Sometimes she picks up flowers, but mainly she's there for fresh produce, et cetera. But there are people like me, when I go out with my son to these markets, we'll go and we'll stay and we'll listen to. Sometimes there's music. I don't know how you approach it in terms of creating that community atmosphere. How do you approach it?
We work hard at building a community atmosphere at our market, and I think everybody here has been to our market and knows that. We do have live music every week. And when the live music isn't playing, we have an iPod going and we are dancing to the music and hula hooping to the music. We also have kids activities. Every kid who wants to participate goes home with a craft that they made and they've tried something from market produce. So we introduce something new to them each week. We have a Walk with a Doc program, so you can come meet a doctor at the market, go for quite a lengthy walk. So it's a healthy walk, takes you through some of the city streets and also through the park, through the Genesee River Trail. And, you get to talk to the doctor about whatever your health concerns are, and you find out that the doctor's a real person, and it's just a great, it's a great thing. We also this year started yoga, so you can come to the market. You can come to the market for yoga, a long walk, a hula hoop, whatever. We have a dining tent, so people can come, buy their dinner, sit down at the tent, listen to the music. It really works.
So when they attend the market, there's going to be people who are in and out, but there are probably people who are there and stay for a long time.
Absolutely. We have some people who just come every week and just sit in the dining tent for almost the whole market, and they just love it. And we can't have the market without those ladies. We love them.
Let me ask Sue Gardner-Smith, who manages the Brighton and the South Wedge Farmers Markets. I'd love to hear your approach. We heard from Jackie talking about it. Give me a sense for the community atmosphere you're creating.
It's a huge part of what we're doing. We do similar things to the things that Jackie described. We have music every week. We have activities for children. We have special events two or three times during the season. We have the fire department come and the police department comes and the ambulance comes. And the kids love to climb on the fire trucks.
Yes, and yes, they do. I have a 2-year-old. I have a 2-year-old who has fire truck bed sheets. So yes.
Well, bring him to Brighton.
Yeah.
To me, one of the most gratifying parts of running a farmer's market is seeing the sense of community that is emerging, that has emerged and is really powerfully strong. When I first started thinking about putting the Brighton Market together, one of the kind of guiding images in my mind was to create a little main street for Brighton for 4 hours every Sunday morning, and it really feels like we have done that. You see people who are talking and talking with their friends, and what was this thing I read? Some sociologist or somebody said that people have 10 times more conversations at a farmer's market than they do at the supermarket. And I would say that would be on the shy side. I bet it's more than that. It's very gratifying to see. But it's also wonderful to see community building around food. Food has always been something that brings people together, that connects people. And that was perhaps lost during the many decades where people lost a connection to local food and lost a connection to food that somebody they knew had created. So the community is not just people seeing their friends at the market, which is a huge part of it, but it's also community between the customers and the farmers. And I think that's vitally important to what we're doing. It's really important for people to get to know the people who are creating their food, who are growing their food. They can have conversations. They can ask them what they used to, how they grew the food, what the production processes were. But also, how's your kid doing? I heard he was sick. I mean, it's really wonderful to see that kind of community building as well. So to me, it's a really, really satisfying thing to be part of that and to feel part of creating a stronger local food system. To me, that's probably the most important thing that we're doing here. We're taking back a food system that became distant and corporatized and remote and unsustainable, and we're bringing it back local, and we're being active participants in that process rather than just passive shoppers at a supermarket.
We're going to get back to the phones in just a second, but before we do, I think the whole notion of conversation, this is nothing against grocery stores and the very good people, and often the very good young people who work at our grocery stores, but they didn't grow the food, and they may not be able to speak that much to it. You're there to move quickly and get out of there. At a farmer's market, they did grow the food most of the time. You can talk about where it came from. You can talk about how the growing season's been going. You can talk about, their techniques and what they prefer. They can tell you how they like to prepare certain foods. I've had all of those conversations.
Lots of recipes.
And then, exactly. And then the next time you're there, you know them a little more. Maybe you show up with your kid and it starts to feel like a family. And it seems so cliche to say it, but it really is true, isn't it?
Oh, it's not at all cliche. The Brighton Market now has been going, this is our 7th year, and I can't tell you the number of babies that have been born to vendors, including vendors here at this market, at this conversation.
Who are not babies anymore, who you got to know.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've lost a couple vendors who passed away. It really feels like it's way more than just a commercial enterprise. It's family, it's friendship, it's relationship, and to me that's precious.
Let me grab a phone call. This is Gary in Rochester. Thanks for calling, Gary.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for taking the call, and thank you to your guests. I go to the farmer's market at Greece, South Ledge. I've been to Brighton and the Rochester Public Market. They're great things. The questions I have, and I'd like to hear the comments of the guests, are there what the economic benefits of a farm market are, the environmental benefits. And I have read an article that said that there's actually no nutritional difference, but if they could address that, and I will be happy to listen offline. Thanks.
Yeah, great call and great questions. And the farmers were immediately nodding as well. Who wants to start there?
I've forgotten most of the questions.
Dennis LaPelle?
Well, the major economic boost for me, especially as a small farmer, I don't do any wholesaling. So the direct benefit is when you and your family eat well, you expect the same from my family. The better we do at market selling our vegetables gives us the ability to shop more from other vendors who raise things that we don't grow. There's an aspect of bartering that goes on, but you can't always barter for your Thanksgiving turkey or your ham or something like that. So it's really economically for me, direct marketing is a way for me to be able to afford to keep myself going as a farmer. I don't have any other income, so for us, our farm is how we support ourselves, And that's something that we've, in the 3 years that we've been in business, we've been working really hard to get off of our savings and rely solely on our farm income to keep our family afloat.
So Dennis LaPelle of Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington has been doing it for 3 years. You know going in it's going to be tough. Is it tougher than you thought 3 years ago?
At the end of a 16-hour day, I would say yes. but sitting in this chair right now, I'm perfectly content. But it's there's definitely a lot of challenges, things that I didn't, you know, look ahead to or, you know, maybe realize was starting with limited means and having to buy mostly used equipment, having lots of things that break down on you in the middle of planting season. My neighbor who's been farming his whole life, who's now in his late 60s, said to me, well, things aren't going to break when you're not using them. So kind of put it in perspective for me. And that's true. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, everything I owned was broken. So then, you know, it takes time away from us from getting things in the ground because I got to get all of my equipment fixed. And it's kind of being like a one-man show. So I'm my own mechanic. I start all my own transplants in the greenhouse. We plant everything out into the field. I do have a staff, excellent group of young people who work with me. At the farm, and that's really what, you know, keeps everything moving, keeps everything possible.
Sandy Munson, the co-owner of Fisher Hill Farms in Bristol, how long have you been doing it?
Oh, my husband Philip started, I don't keep good records, but I'm going to say 13, 14 years ago. I know Canandaigua Market's been open for 13 years, and we're one of the original vendors from that market. So it's impressive. I'm only 25, you know, so it's real young when we started. But same as Dennis, we have our oldest daughter is 3 and a half. And after she was born, I did not go back to my full-time job. So it used to be that I worked full-time off the farm and filled it, the farming. And then we jointly figured out how to get to all these markets. And 3 and a half years ago, I did not go back to work. So the farm is our sole source of income for our family. And so the economic impacts are huge for us locally. And I think it's a huge trickle, and it's not little rings, it's big rings. I mean, in Canandaigua, Saturday mornings, we are on Main Street. People who are either shopping at those shops or coming to the market, people from the market are going to the shops.
Yeah, what time is the Canandaigua market?
We are 8:30 to 12:30 Saturday mornings. You'll see bright yellow signs. We're just off of Main Street. Under a nice pavilion, actually. One of the only local markets like this, rather than the public market, that has a cover. So we're cool in the summer. We're not so super windy or rainy on those bad days. And people take advantage of that. They are there. Going back to the other conversation, they're there for hours. Somebody will shop at you, and you'll see them 2 hours later. Are you still here?
Right.
Oh, I ran into so-and-so. Or, oh, yeah, I was talking to this person. Or, I came back. You know, I got home, and I ate all the strawberries. Oh, sorry, Evan. I ate all the peas, which are still in season. And I came back for more.
And the peas are great, by the way.
So that was the one. What else is the question? Well, I mean, the economic impact of Dennis saying that he has employees. You know, we've taken on employees in the last several years. We now have payroll, and there's an economic impact right there. Either young people or older folks, we have a full-time person now season long because the movement's so big, and we need him. You know, we can use him all year long, and so he, you know, he stopped a part-time job that he was doing, yeah, and is now with us all the time.
So you can see the impacts there. And again, it's been 13 years for Sandy Munson, 3 years for Dennis. And I should ask you, I mean, you're a decently young man. Why did you get into farming?
Oh, that's a multi-layered question. there was a few things. When I had been living in New York City for a while, I did grow up in Rochester on the west side, but I was living in New York City, and my wife and I started our family. We were having children, and we were looking for a way to eat better for ourselves, so we joined a CSA ourselves. We went on a farm visit of our CSA farm out in Long Island, and I personally fell in love with it and said, wow, I could really do this.
And you were how old?
At that time, I was probably 27.
And most 27-year-olds don't think, you know, I've never really been in farming, but farming.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was kind of a thing growing up in Rochester and having a place in the Finger Lakes in the summertime to go to. You know, always driving by all these farms and seeing it, I was always really intrigued by farming and growing food and things like that. At first, when I was little, I thought it was because I would never be talented enough to do anything to afford to make a living, so I thought I could always raise my own food. But little did I know that it costs a lot to raise your own food so, at that time. But anyways, so we went and visited our CSA farm. I said to my wife, boy, I could really do this. And we were given an ability to move back here. And it was kind of a point in our life where we said, if we want to do something new and big, now is the time. So that's what we decided to do. So after our healthy shift in lifestyle, we said, let's go at this. So when we were still in New York, I worked at a couple of farms there just to make sure it was right, and then we bought our place.
Any regrets?
No regrets. I can't live life that way.
It's a really remarkable story. In a moment, we're going to take the shortest break in radio, and then we're going to come back and talk to the manager of one of the newest farm markets in the area. But before we do that, let's get back to the phones. This is Bob in Rochester. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Thank you. I am a regular to the Brighton Farmers Market, and it is truly a community, and love this whole topic of conversation. You know what this makes me immediately think of is Hart's Local Grocers. The downtown market, the grocery that's going to open later this summer, their whole approach, their whole philosophy, their whole emphasis on local foods and goods and regional cuisine is exactly the kind of focus that all of you are talking about.
Yeah, I admit, Bob, I mean, I've spoken briefly to some of the people involved, but that's probably a great topic for a future show right here to talk more about what they're going to be doing. But I suspect we're going to see more of that. Part of it, though, don't you think, Bob, is a question of, you know, as Michael Pollan has written, we equate this notion of healthier, sometimes we equate the notion of healthier with more expensive, which I think is debatable to begin with, especially when it comes to health care costs later in life and a lot of other factors. But sometimes it's just making a choice to change a lifestyle, and it's been sort of a slow move, but I think that that kind of momentum will continue, don't you?
Yeah, but I think also that people are looking for meeting the farmers.
Yep.
Some of the people you have on the show,
yep.
People are willing to pay more because they know you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, 7 days a week. You are at the market. You are growing for all of us here. And there's that community connection that people want in all kinds of ways, including retail. You know, I want the best and the healthiest food.
Yep.
We can get.
No question about it. I mean, I think about that beet slider that I had, and I've been so fixated all hour on it. I know. I'm going tonight, I think, to get more beet slider. I what did I pay? $9 or $10 or something like that for it?
If you had it with a plate, yes.
Yeah. I could go to a fast food restaurant and get probably a CAFO-based cow product for, I don't know, $2.50. It's not worth it to me. It's worth it to me to pay a little bit of a premium to know not only where the dollars are going, but to know it's healthier. It is absolutely jaw-droppingly delicious. So all of those things. And Bob, thank you for the call and the great points to bring it back to that, just reminding us that, yeah, I mean, I could do a whole hour on whether it's actually more expensive to eat healthy, and I could really debate this. But the point is, and there are certain moments where you pay a little bit more? Sure, and I have zero problem with that. Let's take the shortest break in radio because I'm way late, and come back and talk to the manager of one of the newest farmers markets in our area as we continue with our first ever Farmers Market Roundtable right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, how do you decide which music to play for your children? Several major recording artists have brand new albums of children's music, and we'll look at how the industry has changed since we were kids. We'll also talk about how music can impact a developing mind, examining our playlists for our kids. Next hour on Connections.
Now While playing at the Little, Obvious Child tells the story of aspiring comedian Donna Stern, played by breakout actress Jenny Slate. Every day as a female 20-something provides material for her hysterical and relatable brand of humor. But when Donna winds up unexpectedly pregnant, she embarks on a hilarious and totally unplanned journey of self-discovery and empowerment. Huffington Post says Jenny Slate knocks this one out of the park, and in case it's not clear, is very, very funny. See details at thelittle.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This whole concept of having a farmer's market roundtable came when I heard from one of the vendors down at the Canandaigua Farmer's Market who suggested a conversation about that, and it had me thinking about all of the wonderful markets and farms in the area, and so glad to have this conversation. And on the phone with us now is Emily Smallwood, who is the manager of the Pittsford Village Farmer's Market. And Emily has an interesting backstory as well. Emily, thanks for joining the conversation.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You are not not that old to the area, are you? When did you come to our area?
I moved to the Rochester area only about a year ago, moving here from Austin, Texas.
Which is great, by the way, because Austin is such a hot city and the whole world thinks everyone's moving to Austin. So it's nice to hear someone coming from one of the hottest cities to Rochester. We'll take it. What convinced you that there was space for another farmer's market in Pittsford?
Well, I think for me, having training as a pastry chef and just an overall foodie, and then coming from Austin that has one of the strongest local farm-to-table movements, I was really excited to get involved with a group that wanted to grow our local food system. I became part of Friends of Pittsford Village, which is a local civic association here in the village, and they are sponsoring the new farmers market here. And, you know, Pittsford was historically a farming community, so it just made sense to go back to our roots and to learn more and educate our community about our local food system.
Well, and again, I want to stress to our listeners, we could have gone in so many different directions with this kind of a roundtable. I mean, I've been to the Ithaca Market, which just is tremendous, and all throughout the Finger Lakes. So this isn't trying to favor one over another. There's just so many out there. And I encourage you, if you just Google Farmers Markets Rochester, Farmer Markets Finger Lakes, you'll find the several dozen that are out there. And, you know, you talk about family activities, especially this time of year. It's great. And Emily, I will tell you what was so exciting for me is my son loves cherries. He loves all fruits, but he loves cherries. And, you know, the last few weeks or months, there were California cherries, I think, at the grocery store, that kind of a thing. But we kept waiting for the first cherries. And I think we got some of the first local cherries from Lagner Farms at your market, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's that excitement, that moment that, you know, as Sandy and Dennis have been describing, that you know it came from just miles away and probably picked just recently. That's an exciting moment for people, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every week as I'm helping the market set up, you know, I start eyeing what people have and, you know, it's like, oh, you know, the raspberries are finally here. Last week, I think I saw the first apricots. It is, and it's great that we can, you know, bring your kids to the market and learn what does grow locally and what, you know, what does grow in each season. You know, we don't have strawberries year-round, you know, normally. and when you get that local strawberry, I think it's, you know, it tastes phenomenal, and it's a real experience, you know, totally different from what you buy at, you know, the grocery store.
Yeah, it's thrilling to have strawberries with flavor.
Yeah. It might be tiny, but they're tasty.
Oh, they are so good. So, Emily, before we let you go, let us know again when people can come to the Pittsford Village Farmers Market.
The market runs every Thursday from 4 to 7:30, so come on out tonight. You can listen to the music. We have a kids' corner. We have cooking demos, and you can enjoy the Erie Canal while you're out here.
Thanks for taking the time to join the conversation, Emily. I know it's a busy day for you getting ready. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Evan.
It's Emily Smallwood, the manager of the Pittsford Village Farmers Market. And again, yes, there's a Pittsford Town Market, which is off Monroe Avenue, I think, as we've established. So there's so much that is out there. And Sandy Munson of Fisher Hill Farms in Canandaigua. Again, I got to give props to Canandaigua because it kind of sparked this conversation. What's the ethos? What's sort of the mindset of either sometimes it's sustainability or organic farming, et cetera? How does Canandaigua approach that market there?
Our approach and our sort of our motto, like, you know, we're really trying to encourage and support local agriculture, whether it be the families, the producers, that what we're doing is affecting those vendors that you're talking to. And we are producer only, so the people that you see, they grew it, they picked it, they made it. That's our focus there.
And let me also ask Jackie Farrell, who manages the Westside Farmers Market. Again, give me a sense for how large a market. I know I was scribbling some notes earlier. Pittsford Village is a little smaller, I think, than Canandaigua. How many vendors at Canandaigua? There's like three dozen or something like that.
About 30 we can hold, yeah,
okay,
a couple outside.
Right. And so what about the, for example, the Westside Farmers Market? How large?
We're a smaller market. We have about 15 vendors, all also producer only within 100 miles. And a good variety of product.
And what about Sue Gardner-Smith, manager of the Brighton and South Wedge Farmers Markets? How big are those markets?
The Brighton market is pretty good size. We're about 55 vendors now.
Wow.
The South Wedge market is about 22, 23 vendors. It's a smaller space, but it's a really wonderful space. It's shaded by enormous trees. It's a really lovely market. People are very, very attached to it, very committed. It's been around now. This is its eighth year. One thing I want to mention that the South Wedge Market is offering this year, Brighton will have it in the future, but South Wedge and the West Side Market have a wonderful new program for our low-income customers. It's a grant-funded project called the Fresh Connect Checks Program. So EBT or SNAP customers can bring their EBT cards to the market, and for every $5 in EBT tokens that they purchase, they'll get an additional $2 Fresh Connect check, so they get free food. Just by coming and using their SNAP cards at the market. We're really excited about this program. We think it's going to bring a lot of new customers into the market. One of our big goals is to bring this wonderful food that we all get to enjoy to some of the low-income members of our community who feel like they might not be able to afford it. With this wonderful grant program, we're bringing that food to more people, and we're really excited about this.
Yeah, that's outstanding to hear. I'd like to spend the last part of the hour, if we could, for our Farmers Market Roundtable, talking about just the value of knowing where your food comes from. And I think there's a lot of different things we could say about that. But let me ask David Romaine, from the chef side of things. You know, I don't know if we, you know, to me it feels like in 5 and 10 years we've seen a big change in terms of customers who care about where the food comes from. What about on the chef side of things? What's the value to you?
I follow that rule, and that's coming from culinary school and learning how to do food the right way. You know, I avoid the stickers. If I got to peel a sticker off it, then it's not from here. Then that's been the basis for working at all of these markets, and it's what we try to source as much as possible. I'd prefer it, you know, the fresher the possible, not, you know, as I said, not having food sitting out and cooking on the grill. We try to cook everything to order for everybody. It's one of our biggest goals to support all the local vendors that we've consider family. It's a big background for us, and it's a slow push on it. You know, there's the slow food movement, there's the local movement, but I see it's a growing trend that hopefully is, you know, not a trend anymore, but just the constant.
Yeah, right. You care about your doctor, your pilot, that they're sort of qualified and certified. Are you surprised that there are plenty of people still who don't really care to know where their food comes from, Dave?
We get it, and that was some of the battle with first starting that with a cart. You know, people trying to tell the difference of, you know, where's your food from, or and some just not even caring. It's $5 for a hot dog kind of thing, you know?
Right, right.
but being able to showcase them, and it's like having your own little open kitchen. So it's a demo at the same time. It's not just coming out of a window for us. You can see everything that we're doing there. So we try to stay on top of our game with it, and everybody knows to talk about every aspect of it, how we make. I mean, you're the beet slider.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everyone that's, if you've never had the either one, start with a carrot. You know, when we worked with that to have more of the base flavors and some rosemary and cumin and deeper flavors in the beet. We want to bring the brightness out with some summer squash, zucchini, the zest.
Can you give a secret away here? How are you bonding? What's the bonding agent for the carrot and
beet? This year, we actually, it used to be a breadcrumb because I wanted to get away from, you know, the egg product in there, and I really wanted to go entirely vegan with it. But then I've had so much influence of people asking for the gluten-free, and then, of course, studies say that that's not true or not, you know, whether it's real or not, but we try to cater to everybody. So this year we've worked with buckwheat flour. Actually, it works really well. So we either use a mixture of chickpeas, which is a lot of it, but the buckwheat flour is the binder. Sometimes we've tried some flax, and we even changed the whole process of cooking it so it's more of a rustic. It's like an ice cream scoop, gets flat on the grill,
yeah,
and it's a nice crunch to the outside. But the other internal part of it is that most veggie burgers are rice-filled, mushroom-filled, and they say, oh, it's veggie, but it's not really veggie. So when we hand-grate the carrots, they still have crunch and, you know, toothiness to them as well. So,
and my son did really enjoy watching you do it. Like you said, I mean, so that's definitely part of the fun is seeing it actually come together. To the point that David was making about gluten-free, if I'm interpreting correctly, certainly celiac is real. Gluten sensitivity is being debated on whether or not it's a real thing, and I don't want to open up a can of worms there. Certainly plenty of people feel that it is, and it's important, and I think the point you're making is you try to cater to what people need or want.
Exactly, yeah. And we have that with the entire farmer's plate itself. If somebody doesn't want it, we have other vendors that actually gluten-free, Ellie's Gluten-Free Bakery is at Brighton. Many customers will like go over and grab a roll, we slice it, we grill it, and we see, you know, we try to make everybody happy with everything. So to keep everything flexible, I never like to pigeonhole us into a little square and say that's all you can get today.
Yeah, so absolutely. Well, since I've got a couple farmers here, you know, and again, we're not going to get too political here, but we spent an hour a couple weeks ago on the question of GMOs. Wegmans had a representative here. They talked about their position. We looked at what Vermont is doing with a GMO labeling law. New York State had a bill that did not pass this year, and there is a lot of moneyed interest regarding GMOs. The goal wasn't for me not to demonize GMOs, but to talk about whether people know what's in their food. And so I'll ask Sandy Munson, how do you feel about the notion of knowing what's in your food, and are you concerned about GMOs as a farmer?
Yeah, we are. We are concerned, and we like to know. I mean, we do know. I think on the customer side, I'm sorry, I'm not really answering your question, but this is where my mind always goes, is that we don't mind you asking the question, but it's just how you approach the question. You know, when you're talking about demonizing GMOs, that really is the public perception for a lot of these, for a lot of our market customers, and that's fine. It's good to be informed, but just please ask the questions kindly instead of coming up and assuming that we are, because we have beets, and you've heard that, you know, beets they're all GMO. They're not all, you know, not all corn is GMO. You know, most of sweet corn actually is not. That's not where the money is in that GMO marketing and the GMO research. So our sweet corn GMO free, but just, you know, ask us, but just, I don't know, make it.
So what you're saying is there is a little, there's certainly an interest in GMO, but to the point where some people are almost a little hostile about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It does come across that way. And maybe because you're just one person asking the question, but when you're the 40th person that we've dealt with, maybe we get a little sensitive to it also.
Well, it's different if someone says, hey, by the way, what's your view on GMOs, as opposed to, why would you grow corn? Corn has GMO.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
so
there's when especially, it must be especially frustrating when it's not a GMO product.
Yes.
Dennis LaPelle, same question. Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington, how do you feel about GMOs?
That's a sorted question. For us, we get, you know, similar responses with Sandy is, I grow edamame, which is soybeans. And edamame is not a GMO soybean. It's for the same reasons that sweet corn is not a GMO corn. So a lot of people will ask in the same sort of manner about the edamame. But in order to be certified organic, such as we are not allowed to use GMOs. But for me, the real issue with GMO personally stems with the environmental impact, less to do with the modification of the actual products themselves, but more to do with the glyphosate that's used in conjunction with a lot of GMO use, and that's the broad spectrum herbicide that you know, kills just about everything but the plants that have been altered to resist it. So that's, for me, more the problem that I have with it as an organic farmer with a focus on sustainability and environmentalism, that's where I take issue with it. I don't use anything harsher than diatomaceous earth on my plants. So when I see, you know, other people who ask the question, you know, what is it that you do or what do you use, I can confidently tell them that they're not going to have that in my
yeah.
product.
And diatomaceous earth, DE, as I understand it, is sort of decomposed marine layer material.
Correct.
Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
So we could spend a whole day on the subject of, and I've asked this question and I've heard it asked before, is this a climate where organic is even possible? And Dennis is saying absolutely, but then the question becomes, you know, what are the materials you use in lieu of some of the? We'll do that on a whole different day. Is that all right?
Will you come back and help with that discussion? Gladly.
I appreciate that. We've got about 45 seconds left here. Let's go around the room. My favorite thing at the farmer's market this time of year are the local cherries. I want to pick one product that when it hits the market, it gets you more excited than any other. Dennis?
In the spring, it's fresh greens.
Fresh greens in the spring. Sandy?
Right now, peas, edible snap peas. Edible
and by the way, I like them better raw than cooked.
Absolutely.
Because they're
yep.
so good raw.
Yep.
David?
Mine would have to be the garlic scapes. I probably have about 5 pounds at my house. My family loves them.
Very good. Sue?
The red currants just showed up at the market Sunday. I was jumping up and down.
Very good. And Jackie?
I have to say raspberries. I wait for them every year.
Are they here yet? Where are the raspberries?
Yep, they're here.
They're here.
They're here.
Okay. Our first Farmers Market Roundtable, great success. By the way, real quickly, Jackie, most of the markets run into the fall, through part of the fall, but usually
most
until
of them late. Run into the fall. Yeah, ours, we end middle October when the weather starts changing and the nights come sooner.
And I don't mean to get ahead of ourselves, but that's only 3 months away, so let's enjoy it. And for our listeners, again, if you just Google farmers markets in the Rochester Finger Lakes area, you will find so many. So not just the ones you're hearing here. Open it up, take a look all throughout the Finger Lakes and Rochester area. Thanks to everybody here. Jackie, Sue, David, Sandy, Dennis, thank you so much. Appreciate all of your time. Coming right back here on Member Supported Public Radio. Stay with us.